I always forget. I hate it because I forget to take it off. There we go. Hebrews. Can I ask you a question? Can you answer honestly? How many of you have ever read any of the Epistle to the Hebrews? Right. I'll put my hand up as I have to as well. Thank you. That's what I thought. Not many. It's one of, I think, one of the most difficult books in the New Testament. And I consider it an honour, Heather, to be asked to open the preaching on the series on Hebrews. Then when I read what I was going to preach upon, I realised that it possibly was not such an honour as as you originally thought. I'm going to ignore most of the reading. I'm going to concentrate on the last few verses, the few verses in chapter 12. And I'm actually I don't normally do this, but I'm going to read the reading again, that bit of the reading, because I think coming at the end, it can easily be skipped over. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, I mean, that's all the people mentioned in the first chapter 11, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Encouragement is a wonderful thing, marvellous thing. And this is a little story that's been going the rounds for years. And in fact, I found it on the letter page of a daily newspaper. I'm not going to tell you which one I read. About a couple of weeks ago. And it goes like this. One morning, I opened the door to get the newspaper, and was surprised to see a little dog I didn't know with our paper in its mouth. Delighted with this unexpected delivery service, I fed him some treats. The following morning, I was horrified to see the same dog sitting in front of our door, wagging his tail furiously, surrounded by 8 newspapers. I spent the rest of that morning returning the papers to their owners. Simple encouragements work. A second example of encouragement, a rather more serious one, is one written by a great hero of mine, as some of you will know, Tom Wright. He was at one point Dean of Lichfield, then he was Bishop of Durham. He is a theologian of the very first class, but he also has the gift of writing for ordinary people like you and me. And out of the 70 books he's written, just think 70, I mean, however do you have time to do all that? I don't know. Out of the 70 books he has written, 10 are a new, well, not new now, but 10, 15 years ago, a new commentary on the whole of the New Testament. They're called, what are they called? I've forgotten what they're called. Yes, Mark for everyone, Matthew for everyone, you know, so on and so forth. Eventually, Revelation for everyone. And in his book on Hebrews, Tom Wright describes something that happened to him. And I'm going to, it's quite long, but I'm going to read it to you because I think it sums up exactly what I've just read from Hebrews. This is what Tom says. I went to a school that prided itself on its outdoor pursuits. Set high in the Yorkshire Dales in northwest England, it celebrated its location in several ways. The annual climax being a 10-mile cross-country race over steep, difficult ground. Often, as many as 80 or 100 boys would enter this race, with the purpose for most of us being not to win. We left that to the serious athletes, but to get round in a reasonable time, to forge on through mud and heather until we made it back to the finish in the small town where the school was situated. The year I ran the race, I came, if I remember rightly, about 35th, respectable though undistinguished. But the thing I remember most vividly was the final stretch, the last half mile or so. I'd trained for the race over the previous weeks and had been through the actual course several times. I was quite used to the closing stages. Here we were, back again, almost at the point of a rest and a bath and a hot drink. But this time, it was totally different. I had known there would be spectators, of course, but I hadn't prepared myself for the hundreds of boys, parents, and local people from the town who turned out to watch as we all came back, bedraggled, but mostly happy from our hour and a half of hard work. They were cheering, waving flags, clapping and shouting encouragement and congratulations. It went on, down the road into the town, increasing as we got to the centre, reaching an extraordinary roar as, with a friend running beside me, I rounded the final bend and came down the road to the finish. All these people, where had they all come from? And such noise. It felt like being a real celebrity, if only for 2 minutes. Several aspects of the passage in Hebrews that we began with draw on the image of the Christian pilgrimage as a long-distance race. And the first aspect is obviously the great cloud of witnesses all around us. Those who have gone before us from Abel and Abraham right through to the unnamed heroes and heroines noted at the end of chapter 11 haven't simply disappeared, because there they are at the finishing line, cheering us on, surrounding us with encouragement and enthusiasm, willing us to do what they did and finish the course in fine style. The difference is, of course, that in a race, the runners are competing against one another, whereas in the journeying of God's people, what matters most to each runner is that all the others make it safely home as well. So what must we do to run the race with efficiency and success? The writer continues the athletic imagery to suggest three things in particular. First, we must get rid of any heavy weights that are slowing us down. Athletes sometimes train carrying heavy packs on their backs to build up strength and energy against the time when, for the actual race, they will run without any extra weight at all. But far too many Christians try to run the race of Christian pilgrimage while carrying all sorts of heavy baggage. Anxieties about trivial concerns. Ambitions to use their faith and the gospel as a means of self-advancement. Resentments at other people. Secret desires and greeds, and so on. You could make the list as well as I. They can get in the way and can constrict our movement and hamper our progress. The writer seems to have in mind the danger an athlete might face, for example, if the track isn't completely clear, if someone puts a hurdle in the way, or leaves a bench or some object across the path of the runners. That's what sin can be like when Christians tolerate it in their lives or in the community. It gets in the way. It can trip you up. It can seriously damage your chance of completing the course. The second point is that this race, like the 10-mile race run at Tom Wright School, is a long haul, and you need patience. There are always some runners in any race who really prefer a short sprint. Some of them, faced with a 10-mile run, will go too fast at the start and then be exhausted after 2 or 3 miles. Sadly, many of us know Christians like that. Keen and eager in the early days, they run out of steam by the time they reach adulthood, and by the time they're in middle age or older, they have either lost all energy for active Christian living or are frantically trying to recapture the zip and the sparkle of a now inappropriate teenage-style face. Give me the person any day who starts a bit more slowly, but who is still there, patiently running the next mile and the next, all those years later. The third point is to keep your eyes, or at least when you're too far away to see, your imagination, fixed on the finishing line, and fixed on the one who is at the center of the cloud of witnesses, waiting there to greet us himself. Jesus ran this course before us. In fact, he pioneered the way. He opened up the course and brought it to a successful completion. Our task is to follow in his steps. He has made it across the finishing line, and his encouragement and the thought of his welcome and congratulations at the end are the central motivation for us to continue in hope and faith and patience. The rest of the passage invites us to contemplate what exactly Jesus went through on his own suffering journey, and to realize that we mostly have had an easy time of it by comparison. He kept his eye on the joy that was waiting for him, the joy of doing his Father's will, of bringing his saving purpose to fulfillment. And he put up with the foul torture of crucifixion, a degrading and disgusting, as well as excruciating and agonizing death. Now, as a result, he is in the key position of honor at God's right hand, as the writer had celebrated in the earlier chapters of the letter. Hebrews, the writer to the Hebrews, is keenly aware that the readers are in danger of being weary with all that they're facing day after day in terms of threats, persecution, intimidation, and mockery from their contemporaries, their neighbors, and perhaps their former friends. This is like the long, hard slog up a steep and muddy hill in the middle of a long-distance race. They must keep going. They must remind themselves continually of the one who blazed this trail in the first place. They must think how much worse it was for him. That way they'll be kept from becoming completely worn out. As so often in the Christian life, reminding yourself of the truth, not trying to conjure up feelings of this or that sort, is the way to keep going in faith and patience and eventually to reach the goal. Amen.